The lights are on red. We're away.
Welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 240 for Friday, 13th of August, 2010. My name is Jim Race. I am here in California, a little bit different circumstances. It's currently about 10:45 here in the evening, and I've got one probably bleary-eyed, coffee-inhaling, got his first smoke of the day, Martin Darlington, over in the UK. Good morning, sunshine.
Morning. It's 06. Oh, my God. It's early 42 in the morning here. And, yes, it's very different. Coffee, poor substitute for Guinness, but it'll do.
Just give you guys a quick little background on this. I had to switch things around because I have acquired a real job. And that might change the dynamic of the show a little bit, at least temporarily. But we do have plenty of content for at least the next couple of weeks with Brno and Indy coming up. But I can't necessarily do it during the day when I was able to talk to Martin in his evening. And so he was very kindly volunteered to do it early on his Friday morning. And today is Friday. Hopefully you guys will get this by then. Today is the first day of Brno, where Jules is right now, coincidentally. He's shooting for MotoMatters.com. And we'll hopefully have some great content for next week. But I'm sorry, Martin.
It's all right. It's like, as we've said, if you have a passion for something, you move your life around your passion.
Well, we'll see how well this works out. And I'm sure we'll be figuring it out as time goes on. But the bottom line is that we're having way too much fun doing this. And we want to make sure to continue to bring you guys, the MotoGPOD listeners, all the great stuff you've come to expect, all the great interviews and insight. And so we'll figure it out. And a little bit of stuff here. Interviews, believe it or not, we actually have none this week. And that's probably a product of my kind of weird schedule. And I didn't want to schedule them since I tend to do them with people in the Europe or UK. I didn't have anything set up for the U.S. this week, and so there are none. And you know, I'm not even going to apologize for that. The average is pretty good so far this year. And once again, Jules is in Brno, so he'll have some great stuff for us next week. Listener emails, you think you can handle at least the first one? I think it's great.
Yeah, Papa Thiam we heard from again. And he made an interesting point about, I don't know if people across the pond were aware of this, but at the last Brands Hatch round of the British Superbike Championship, Tom Sykes from World Superbike did a wild card, which is strange because normally you think of wild cards of people moving up a series, whereas this was moving down. It was a three-race weekend, and Tom won races two and three, which was the first time a Kawasaki has won a National or World Series race for something like 4 years, I think.
But I will point out to you that it's not that unusual, because if you think about it, remember when Keo came down and did that masterful wet race riding on the Tenkate third bike, the satellite bike, and came over and did the Brit round as well.
Yeah, no, that's true. excuse me. Clearly not that unusual, but I was worried about, or not worried, but concerned about what does that say about Tom Sykes' future. However, Paul Bird was absolutely, and the whole team were over the moon when he put that double win in. Papa suggests that maybe that this shows that the level of BSB has dropped significantly. The only point I'd make there is that Paul Bird's Kawasaki team have got a budget of $2.6 million, reportedly, whereas MSS Colchester, which is the BSB Kawasaki team, they use about $700,000 for a year's racing. Michael Rutter commented that you could see Tom's bike's electronics kicking in and working for him. So it is a very different animal. at the same time, I will concede that over the last 2 years, an enormous amount of talent has moved from the British Superbike Championship up to World Superbikes and World Supersport. So, yeah, I think it's not as strong as it was 2 years ago when you had the likes of Kamiya and Haslam and just before that, Ray, you know, and the like, and Cal Crutchlow banging fairings. But I still think it's a pretty decent series. His other point was regarding Ducati and what they represent to the World Superbike Series. The suggestion recently, the rumour that they may pull out of World Superbikes because they feel that the 1198's at the end of its development cycle and they don't feel they're competitive anymore. So Papa suggested, as they're so important to the series, would in front reduce the four-cylinder bikes to 750s and Ducati can develop a 1000 twin. And I thought, no, I don't think there's the slightest chance of that, because let's not forget these are production-based bikes and the only people who make a sport 750 is Suzuki, and no one's about to start reducing the size of their sports bikes when the 1000s outsell all the other models.
But Papa had made a very good point about that, if you think about it. That, and frankly, this is very true, and it's kind of a bit of a annoying thing to me. That's the only way I can put it. He said that would leave room for the twins to grow in size again, with 1,000cc street bikes getting closer to 200 horsepower, while traffic laws everywhere make that level of performance only relevant at a neighborhood bar, and I put in parentheses or Starbucks. This almost seems predictable. It's a really interesting thought, but to me that literally is a deja vu, because they did that once before, and they didn't do it once before. That was the way that it was before, and it would seem like a throwback to. It would seem like a backward step, and your point is very well taken. That truthfully, Suzuki really is the only company right now of major manufacturer that makes a high performance 750. Now I'm probably going to get emails from people saying, well, what about, well, in at least 750 national championships, which are still relatively common, those bikes are winning all the time. And so if you guys have something to refute that, feel free, but those are the facts. And will it happen? I don't think so. And frankly, Papa is very good at coming up with conspiracy theories about everything.
Yeah, so in no way, Papa, please feel that this is a put-down. Do keep them coming. I quite take his point that the performance of a 1,000cc sports bike ridden on legal roads, public roads, he's quite right. The performance is only relevant in the bar. But that's what people want. They want to have the bike that will do 0 to 60 in 2.1 seconds or, you know, whatever it is. The fact they're never going to be able to do it themselves, well, not safely anyway, is kind of irrelevant. You know, people, petrol heads like numbers. And if your bike's got the best numbers, in your mind, you've got the best bike.
There are those of us who actually don't look at the numbers. They actually look at the numbers around the track, regardless of what the horsepower is. But that is not the general public. And I totally I understand that mindset. I don't necessarily agree with it. And frankly, I wish that people would kind of understand that if they're on a motorcycle that they can't ride anywhere near like 80 to 90%, then they've got a bike that is too much for them. And they probably paid too much for. And, yeah. But that being said, that is not – there goes any sponsorship we'll ever have from one of the big four or the big five or six or however way you want to count it. But that, too, is a fact. And, you know, UK is different with tiered licensing. Over here in the States, a, you know, 16, 17-year-old can walk in and buy an 1198 if he's got the Dosh, which I think is just absurd.
Yeah.
And
I completely agree.
But I mean, it is what it is. And, you know, there's probably people out there nodding their heads going, yeah, but well, I don't know. That is an argument. You know, we should save that one for the winter. We could have a great show.
Yeah.
You mentioned that, and some of that information came from MCN. There was also a really good piece that Simon Buckmaster did, and he's got his Simon Says series, which I totally love because he doesn't pull any punches in person or in print. And he did a very interesting comparison of the performance with Paul Byrd's team against the BSB teams and how there is not a whole lot of parity. And, I mean, you know, obviously Tom's been struggling this year in World Superbike. Hmm. He comes over and he didn't decimate them, but he certainly had a great performance. Although I do have to tip my hat, please, to Alistair Seeley for his first win. This was a triple race weekend. And he got his first race win, and that was fantastic on the Relentless Suzuki. Teammate to Michael Laverty, who we've had in the show before. So well done.
Yeah, and we'll briefly mention the strange season structure of BSB later on. On a similar argument or a similar discussion point, but taking an opposing view, was Skyler Vicroy, who argued that actually the Ducatis do have some development left in them. He believes they've still got some restrictors in the engines which could be removed. And, of course, Ducati recently mentioned that for 2012 there will be a completely new replacement for the 1198. So, you know, I agree, and I do think that in front will bend over backwards to keep Ducati in World Superbike. They really don't need a manufacturer who's putting that many bikes on the grid to walk away. And not just from the pure number of bikes, it's also the prestige element of, okay, they're just leaving. The argument having been, or the suggestion having been, that once Ducati have Rossi, which we're expecting to know for a fact by Monday, they may look and go, do we really need it? I think personally for it, manufacturer of Ducati size, it's as important to be in World Superbikes as it is anywhere else, but you know, we'll see.
Yeah.
Skyler also mentioned the Johnny Ray interview, and it was brilliant. I didn't have a chance to listen to it before the show, so I had that wonderful thing of listening to the show and thinking, yeah, that's me talking, so I know that. And the Johnny Ray bit was really candid, really open. I like that thing of really very difficult to be objective about oneself by definition, but very objective about his abilities, honest, could come across as arrogant, but then he wasn't. But then you listen to him again, he says, look, I'm not saying I can go there and beat everybody, but I'm also saying I'm not going to go there and be scared. He said, you know, they talk about aliens. Nah, they're not. They're human beings. They're just very talented.
Yeah, and you know, I listened to that interview two or three times before I actually got it edited in the show, because there was some really interesting insight that came out of it. And I kind of struggled a bit, and I think I did mention it last week, that I wasn't sure exactly how I was going to put it together, whether I was just going to give you folks out there my bit or the entire thing. And I'm kind of glad I did, because there was some good insight, although it was a little bit odd, and we did get a fair amount of comments about that, both through email and on the Facebook fan page. And thanks for that. We always love the feedback, but I think generally it came across great. Johnny sounded great, very interesting, some great insight, and it was once again, and much in the same humanity that we get with Eugene. You're late. Get back on the show. that's called a public plea. I know there's a bunch of you that know Eugene personally. Tell him we're waiting. And it was very cool. So many thanks to both John Garner at MMP and Johnny Ray for participating in that, and as well as the rest of the journalists, many of who asked some great questions. So thanks both Papa and Skyler. And we'll take that and all the other cards and letters that we got. Plenty of feedback this week. Once again, Jules is in Brno, so I can't wait to see what he's coming up with. He's been peppering us with, through Facebook and through other means, he's been basically in Europe, in Eastern Europe, for, I guess it's 3 weeks now, and he spent a whole bunch a whole bunch of time in Poland, and is doing this incredible photo essay thing. And you guys all know how, or I hope you know, how good his photography is. And if you don't, track it down. We'll try and figure out a way to get it to you. We've had links in the show in the past. Right up till now, he's just been doing, you know, kind of artsy stuff of his travels. But I can't wait to see what he comes up with for Brno.
Yeah. Yeah, no, some of Jules' photographs are spectacular.
Yeah, it should be very cool. Very, very cool. All right, moving on to some additional news. We learned today, being late Thursday, that Tony Elias, not Tony Elias, frankly, the Gresini Moto2 squad made what at least I consider they're not going to talk to me in any if I say this, but either
a bit of a mistake.
Either a foolish error, or, and I do have a theory here, a cunning choice, and I'll tell you why I'm saying that. It was already known what the fines would be for something like this. There was some whispers about it before, and really the penalty wasn't too bad. That being of a relatively small cash fine, and being banned for the first practice of the next race weekend.
Maybe we should say what they've actually what they've done.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I don't think we've mentioned that yet.
We haven't. Okay, so Tony Elias did a short practice at Misano, and word is it was about 2 hours long. I believe he did it last Sunday. And he did it with the test rider for Moriwaki, and they basically were looking for a little bit more top speed from the bike, frankly, because there were parts of Brno, which were a top speed track. He is leading the championship, so this is, you know, they're paying a whole lot of attention to the bike, the team, aerodynamics, of course. And the funny thing was, it was very public, it was published all over the place. Even MotoGP.com had an article about it. But then they turn around, or not they, not MotoGP.com, of course, but and I'm assuming it was the FIM, it may have been Dorna, that fined the team. They say Tony Elias got in trouble. Well, Tony didn't get in trouble, frankly, because the thing for doing this certainly came from the Gresini Moto2 squad. 3,000 euros, and they are not going to be allowed to run practice today or Friday. The first practice. So they're going to miss an hour of practice. Why might that not be a big deal? Well, getting 2 hours of time on a track that you'll be running later this year, and that's the problem. They practice on a track with their bike that they'll be running later this year, is pretty good. Misano's not traditionally been the best track for Tony. Tony, on the other hand, likes Brno, does well at Brno, granted on a MotoGP bike. In fact, he was on the box last year, one of the few privateers that made it. And so it might be a valid trade-off. That being said, that does create a bit of a sticky wicket, as is said in some countries. Because if the fine is this minimal, and there are other teams that can look at the situation and go, huh, and perhaps try and take advantage of that. Now, you know that if teams start to do that, they're going to crack down hard. They're going to be, and no, we're not going to play these games. Whoever they are, I don't know who exactly fined them. But it's one of those things. They do say that racing is all about taking a look at the rules and figuring out how you can use them to your best advantage.
Yeah.
Bless you. And so I think this might be a situation which is where that's exactly what they've done. They said, well, you know, we'll get hit. You know, what is frankly, to a Moto2 team or a team that has Moto2 and a MotoGP team, 3,000 euros is basically lunch money on a Sunday.
Yeah, I couldn't really. I mean, it's such an obvious token fine.
Yeah. So, but I mean, okay, granted, you know, they're going to lose setup on the Moto2 bike at Brno, which is not run at Brno yet, or at least not with Tony Elias on board. But they have data from Brno from last year for the MotoGP bike, and they know it's fairly good data, and they've got good data guys that can have probably figured out a nice little algorithm because they know the geometry of both bikes. And they've probably said, yeah, we'll be pretty good. And Tony's got, a 42-point lead in the Moto2 Championship. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm not trying to – speaking of conspiracy theories, but I think, frankly, it might be either a brilliant move or a daft one. And we won't know until after FP2 on Saturday, will we? Well, frankly, we won't know until after qualifying on Saturday.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean
– no, absolutely. And then again, of course – Misano,
yeah,
where
yeah.
We'll see if he's got any benefit.
Yeah. I think it introduces some very interesting intrigue. Grassini's he's a smart guy. One of the few that has yet to grant MotoGPOD access yet. Thank you very much. But and so I'm being very kind,
yeah.
Kind of. So I think that's an interesting story. Moving on. And I guess this is for Alex. This is for you because we've got a lot to talk about Randy DePugnay because, well, the coolest thing is he's back. And he is back. He rode 20 laps at the – and I'm going to – those of you that speak French are going to hack this. I haven't taken French since junior high school. But at the – Alège Chauvin Mechanics Center in France. And there, I'll put a link in the show notes for this, as well as a link, by the way, to Simon Buckmaster's bit about BSB and World Superbike. He did 20 laps there and on a stock Fireblade. Now, he said he felt okay, and he's been seen at Brno today walking around without any crutches. But I do need to point out that that circuit, and I'm going to talk about that shortly in a moment as well, it's a massive complex, but it's a conglomeration of basically about four or five different circuits for different types of motorsports. It's got a big kart track, FIM spec kart track. It's got a relatively short and very lowish speed newly paved road course, and he did 20 laps on that. I'm not sure exactly how long it is. I couldn't find data on that, but I would have to say that those 20 laps on that circuit, he probably never got out of fourth gear if he even got into that. It is that tight and twisty. So what does that mean? Well, tomorrow's going to be a little bit different. And he did say, I'll read this quote from today. He said, regarding the ride there, he said, I wanted to confirm I would be okay to ride and not just ride slowly, but fast. After the test, I am very happy and also confident for this weekend. There was a small amount of pain in the first five laps, but this is normal, especially with the ankle when changing gear. This weekend, I will try and take as many points as possible. We will see how it goes during the practice and qualifying sessions. I will need to go step by step in each session to work with my head. But that's key. The most important thing is to be prepared for the race and to get your best result. So the transition, you know, actually, that's it's very smart, is taking a little bit of a baby step. I'm sure he would have liked to have the type of testing that Rossi had, you know, running on the R1s at the various circuits. But that certainly wasn't the case, and we shall see. It will be very interesting. I wish him the best of success, and I think if nothing else, and, you know, the best of success and safety, because that was one of our chief concerns when Rossi was coming back, that everything will work out fine for him.
Yeah. I really, really chuffed to see him back so quickly. I guess the same as Rossi, the big thing for Randy is just don't crash.
Yep.
And with Valentino, you kind of know that he's going to be able to remain a comfortable few percent inside the limit. Historically, Randy not so much, maybe. I just hope the red mist doesn't descend and he thinks, oh, I've got a chance of a fifth or a third or a, you know, a sixth. I mean, if he gets a sniff of a podium, unlikely though that may sound, I mean, the way he's been riding, it's certainly not inconceivable. I just hope he doesn't allow his adrenaline to overtake that caution bit of his brain that's saying, yeah, if you break this again, that could be the season done.
Yeah, or worse. But I mean, the one sentence that you said, this weekend I will try and take as many points as possible. I will take that at its core and say he's going to keep things under control. You know, he's coming back from a, not quite as serious as Rossi, although it was a bit of a worse break, but it was still internal. You know, a nasty injury, and he's had to endure the pain, not only the pain of it occurring, the pain of the initial recovery, but the pain of the physical therapy to get back into some kind of shape. And frankly, from you know, the look that we had of it last week, which was frankly pretty ugly, and the photos that I've seen of it now, his leg, that being, looked pretty good. And so from externally, it looks fine. And as Lucio Ciccanello, he said, mechanically, it is fine. So,
and their ability to compartmentalize and disregard pain is just amazing.
Yeah, it's legend. So best of luck, Randy. We got more. Your turn. I thought I'd give you a chance to wake up just a bit.
Yeah. Another really good news on the injury front is Hiroshi Ayama is back in the paddock, not racing this weekend, but they're going to use the test on Monday as a means of assessing how far he's come. But he said he's feeling a lot better. He's nearly at full mobility. They've had some recent X-rays, and the broken vertebrae are healing nicely. Again, there's that thing, caution thing of, yeah, just you know, this is a back we're talking about. This is really serious. So don't push it. But really chuffed to see him coming back, and he sounds quite happy. I mean, it was a written interview I read, so you couldn't pick up tone, but certainly quite bullish, looking forward to coming back. And then we were doing some number stats research, and one of the things came up for Bernot is after Laguna Seca, as we go into this race, Yamaha have pipped Honda. Yamaha now have 58 wins in the four-stroke MotoGP era, which is one more than Honda. And I don't know the answer, I haven't looked, but I was thinking, of those Yamaha wins, just how many were won by Valentino Rossi?
Most all of them.
I'm going to guess it could be in the region of 50. No, it can't be that because Lorenzo's won.
Yeah, but I mean,
more than that. But
still, it is very impressive, especially when we were heading into MotoGP, and especially post RC211B, that they've managed to bring that back. You can chalk up a lot of that to the combination of Rossi and Burgess, but you can also put some very good pats on the back to Yamaha, because there were a lot of people in 2003 looking at the series going, oh man, are we heading back into the Doohan Honda domination era, and are we going to lose interest in the series? But, you know, there was a lot of fear going when Rossi went to Yamaha. I mean, people, literally hardcore fans, were fearing for the series. Obviously that didn't happen. And that, I think that unto itself, as far as people that are really into GP racing, really stoked the interest and actually brought it a little bit further out in the public, because there are people that weren't even that interested said, he did what? So.
But we're so used to top people in any walk of life making safe decisions. Once they get to the top, they make safe decisions. The boxer who becomes world champion and then just does fights with people who've got no chance of beating him, and everyone goes, well, this is boring.
Yeah.
You know, for someone in Valentino's position to make that, I mean, looking back now, it's such a brilliant, genius move. But, you know, remember what it was like at the time. It's like, he's going to do what?
Mm-hmm.
It was absolute. It was, I don't know, it was like he announces this weekend at Brno, no, I'm going to go and race in British Superbikes Superstock Series or something. It just seems.
Or how about this one? Since we'll throw out, like, completely bizarre things. No, I haven't signed for Ducati. I'm going to be working with Paul Denning at Suzuki.
Yeah. But as he says in his book, that he said, however much credit he and Jerry Burgess and the team take for the development, he does say you've got to give Yamaha credit for listening.
Mm-hmm.
That they were willing to say, okay, you know, you say what you want, and we'll provide it, which is exactly what Honda wouldn't do. They'd say, no, we'll produce the bike, and then you're just, you know, the rider that goes out and you do what we've created so brilliantly.
Which is interesting, because I think, was it Nakamoto that came in? He was the new race chief, and I don't think that name's right, and I will cut that out if I'm wrong. But he came in this year, and it seems like there's not necessarily a sea change within HRC, but the addition of Livio Supo to the team, which essentially, at least in some part, is bringing Casey Stoner over for 2011, it seems like they're taking steps to, at least, if not necessarily listen, they've realized, because when was the last time, frankly, they had a world championship in the GP class, and you know they're pouring, you know, we're talking millions for a race team. There's probably billions of R&D going in the background, even with, well, certainly since the 211. So that'll be interesting. You had another question, and so I don't know the exact answer to that. I'm sure our listeners will figure it out. Toot sweet. We did not all week get a lovely lady writing. It's probably going to be Sharon this time, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll get her to do it just so we've had an email. Okay. Jorge Lorenzo is one of only two riders who was scored at every round this season. And when I read the other one, I thought, oh, yeah, that's interesting. So I was just wondering if anyone else is sort of immediately aware of it. I mean, yeah, of course, anyone can look it up.
You know, I think I know who it is. No, because he didn't score in the last round.
Yeah, no, I did exactly the same. I was thinking, no. Well, I thought there'd be more.
Oh, no, no.
Because it's such a small field. Yeah. And then I thought, well, hang on, I watched.
Who I was talking about when our little cryptic conversation there was Dipunia. I think Dipunia had scored in every round up until Kelly used him for a launch ramp. So,
yeah.
But we won't give it away, and I can't tell you off the top of my head, and Jules is going, you guys, you should know this. All right, and you had an interesting fact number three, and I'll run through this.
This is incredible.
It is impressive. I'm trying to think if there was a track reconfiguration, and if there was, it kind of makes it a little bit of a wash. But Lucio Ceccanello still holds the 125cc lap record from 2003. It still stands for 8 years this year, making it the longest-standing lap record currently valid across all three of the classes. And if that holds, and I'll do some research, I will pin him down at Indy and get his thoughts on that.
I can't think of a recent Brno circuit change, but then when I say recent, I mean, this is 7 years. So,
very good point. All right. And speaking of Brno, so, clearly, we've got some very interesting things happening this weekend. Will a lot of it all revolve around, well, what color will certain number 46's fairing be next year? I guess that's the easiest way to ask the question, because while everybody thinks they know the answer, there's no doubt that Valentino Rossi has surprised us quite a bit in the past. And
so you really think he might be going to Suzuki?
Only if their fairing is going to be red next year. We're 97% sure that he's going to be going to Ducati, but this weekend is not over yet. And in historically, when there's been this kind of certainty, it's usually ended up to be the absolute deal. So I'm not, you know, I could speculate all week, but I'm pretty damn sure it's going to happen. So, but what is more interesting, the regular silly season, you know, not even that. That is the linchpin to make a whole bunch of other things fall into place. Now, David Emmett of Matters has done a couple of really great pieces. The second one came out today about the satellite teams. 2 days ago was about the primary teams, about who is going where, and what sponsorship is going where. And I'll have a link to both of those as well, because I think they're very interesting. Not sure I agree with all of it, but we certainly have our own sources from different places, but I think all in all, it's really, really well done. And so you guys should definitely read it. Once again, link in the show notes. That should be cool. We've got a big weekend coming up for speculation and interest in a lot of things that we really have no idea, but Brno certainly always produces some fantastic racing, and we really enjoyed what we had from World Superbike, and I'm looking forward to it again. I think it's a neat circuit in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. I mean, it's got the horsepower hill. It's got some very fast corners and a few technical bits, and I do like... Although, when you look at it from the air, it just looks a bit...
dull?
Yeah, but the sort of right angle, a right, a left, a right, a left, a right, down the start, finish straight, that last bit is fantastic for last-ditch overtaking manoeuvres. And then the start-finish straight, when you see it from the air, you think, yeah, whatever. You see it from the ground, it's such a hill. You know, it's the crest, and I do hope that Alvaro Bautista controls his wheelies better this year. Because if anyone remembers last year, that was his celebratory 250. Yes, I'm going to pop a wheelie. Oh, no, I've just looped the bike. But he was very gracious and, you know, self-deprecating smiles on the podium interview, saying, yes, I came back to the team saying, well done for winning, and me saying sorry for breaking the bike.
Well, you know, it's funny because... Jamie McVeigh, who's written into us often, posted on the Facebook page. He says, so any takers on Danny breaking Honda's Baron spell at Brno? And we can all remember 2 years ago when he had a relatively commanding lead in lashing down rain. I think he was 6 seconds in front after about five laps and lost it into the first turn in a really big way. In fact, his bike almost leapt a 30-foot fence. He left a... practically left a hole in the air fence as he impacted. He went way across his gravel trap, basically acting like a flat rock that you skip across a pond. And that actually kind of dashed his chances for the rest of that year. And so we'll have to, you know, it's supposed to be raining again, heavy rain on Saturday and Sunday, but we've had a lot of predictions like that this year, and they haven't always come true. So...
Well, I got the forecast from the BBC, who have repeatedly been saying we're going to have a nice day here and it keeps raining. So maybe if they say it's going to rain there, they'll have a nice day. They got away with it at Silverstone, so fingers crossed. True. And I very much subscribe to the Jules view. If you're going to be wet, be wet. If you're going to be dry, be dry. It's that, halfway in between, there's a drying line appearing. I mean, however interesting and novel a flag-to-flag bike change halfway through, it adds another dynamic to the race. However novel and interesting it is, I really just want to see a straight race.
Sure. Absolutely. And I, in the magic of relatively instantaneous internet questioning and whatnot, I did send, right before the show, a request to Jules to let me know about any meetup info for Brno. I know there's Chuck Forkers out there, super fan Chuck. There's a couple of other people that are going to be at Brno this weekend, and through the magic of flying pigeons and whatnot, I do have some information on the tentative Brno meetup. It's going to be Saturday, hopefully I'll have this show out by then. I think I will. At 12:30 p.m. Behind Grandstand Turn 6, or T6, which is at Turn 8. So Saturday, 12:30, behind Grandstand T6, which is at Turn 8. He does mention that as tentative. He says, unless I post here, otherwise here being on the Facebook MotoGPOD fan page. He says, I hope we're not meeting in ponchos and under umbrellas. So as of 13 minutes ago, Jules posting live from Brno. That's kind of cool, isn't it? And I do want to mention that as the weekend goes on, and I'll be feeding these continuously, or Jules will as well, to the MotoGPOD Facebook fan page. You guys are going to hear sick of hearing about that, but I want you guys to go there because it's like MotoGP all week long. And we've got like well over 700 people on there literally in 4 months. Pretty cool. And we'll be posting some of that stuff there as time goes on, and especially during Indy. So check it out. Say hello. What else we got, Martin? It just goes on and on, doesn't it? I thought this was going to be a short show. No such luck.
Yeah, I'm just keeping an eye on the clock because I need to leave for work shortly.
You didn't take the work vehicle home?
No, they get really upset about that. So do my neighbours if I try and land a helicopter in my back garden because, it destroys greenhouses and plants and garden furniture, ends up in a different postal district. I think they don't introduce a scheme like
that. I'm going to stop you for a moment. You need to do a bit. Take your voice recorder, or if you have anything, and for next week's show, I want figured out how to do it. I want a opening promo type thing of you flying, if you can get away without getting into too much trouble, introducing next week's show.
Okay, I'm not sure what the sound quality will be like.
Oh no, that's going to be part of the brilliantness of it.
But I'll try. Okay.
Anyway. All right, back to, this is the kind of thing, folks, that Martin and I just kind of chat about in the background. So you guys are getting in if I don't necessarily take it out. weather forecast. Good article on the silly season that you guys can check out at Moto Matters. And that's the one that we totally covered. In fact, I just covered that, so I'll cut that out.
Okay. Well, In part one of the David Emmett article on Moto Matters, he says something that I'm going to get panned here again for sounding like a Rossi basher, but it's not a Rossi basher. I think it's a kudos to Rossi's Machiavellian skill about this move to Ducati. And David's basically suggested that in the personality battle in the Yamaha paddock, in a way, you could argue that Lorenzo has won because it's Rossi that's leaving. But he then goes on to say that the move to Ducati will further secure Rossi's place in the MotoGP history books. If he secures another title on a third manufacturer, he'll pass beyond the role of legend and into the realm of myth and perhaps even deity. Some might argue that particularly in Italy, he's already reaching that level. I totally agree with that. What he then says is if he loses, then, of course, the machinery must be to blame, and expecting a plucky little Italian factory to compete with the Japanese giants is asking too much. Rossi will be praised for his bravery, the title of his autobiography cited again and again ad nauseum. Tact and a fear of the fan backlash will prevent most people from providing the appropriate answer to the question, what if I'd never tried it? Namely, that with both Rossi and Lorenzo on equal machinery, the question of who was the better rider would have been settled beyond all doubt. And I've just made the comment, most people might be scared of answering that question, but not the intrepid reporters of MotoGP OD. So I think that Rossi's done a very clever move. He's ducked both of them fit on equal machinery next year, head-on battle, for a number of reasons, but I'm sure he's aware that if he wins next year, that's it. He is on the top step of the podium of history. If he doesn't, it's a new bike.
Yeah, I think, at least to me, I read that, and I'm like, David's being playful with his wordsmithing. Because he does have a penchant for slightly overly dramatic, but at least to me, what I'm looking at, especially at this point in Rossi's career, is that the one thing that he's always tried to do was continue to make racing fun for him, because the guy enjoys racing. It's very clear, not only in the way that he races and the way that he celebrates, but in that, he's just trying to, especially as he ages, to make sure it's still relevant and fun for him. I think this is what he absolutely enjoys doing. So, we'll have to see. That was a very interesting description. I read it, and I think I read it twice.
No, it's very well written, and it's a very entertaining and illuminating article.
Yep.
And he's also in there, he's stressed the areas where we do know, or we're pretty sure we know, and there's other riders with teams and sponsors with teams, where he's put in italics, indicating this is a bit of an educated guess. But and similarly, Cal Crutchlow, who the British Motorcycle Press have been saying, he's Tech Trois wants him in the MotoGP paddock. I mean, the British motorcycling press do have a tendency to big up the Brits, you know, quite obviously. And Cal Crutchlow certainly said, I'd love to go to MotoGP as soon as possible. But he's also got a strong offer from BMW World Superbikes. Davide Tardozzi, you know, has a habit of being able to get what he wants. And, of course, Yamaha. I think Yamaha would quite like Cal to stay in World Superbike for another year, unless Tech Toi can't find two, because they're looking like they're going to have to pick up two new riders if Ben moves up to the factory team and Colin departs to Xerox Ducati or someone else in World Superbike.
True. I would say I'm pretty sure that they will be going with two riders this year. And I say that a bit tongue-in-cheek. In that what that does is that kind of opens up the secondary question, Cal or not, who else or not? And I have a big feeling that we're going to see those questions resolved sooner rather than later, because there is, for a fact, a lot of talking going on behind the scenes. And as soon as we're allowed to tell you, we will tell you. I love leaving things like that out there. yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to, moving on to, do you have any more on the...
Nothing more that I can talk about out loud yet.
The shuffling pack of cards that is this season's...
frankly, David's bit at Moto Matters treated it extremely well. There was only one or two things that I disagree with, and that's pretty impressive for an extremely detailed and in-depth look at that. And he's got a great tendency to do that. I should also mention that he is at Brno with Jules, and I know those two get along famously, so you should get some interesting stories out of it as well. They are both equipped with – oh, I'll mention this. They're both equipped with full media access. Jules should be on – see if he gets on the grid, but he should be all over the hot pits. Why do I bring that up? Well, and I want to thank our friends at New Media at Dorna very, very much. Both Jules and I are going to be outfitted at Indy with full media access. So it's very cool for MotoGPOD that will bring you guys, the listeners. Well, you thought Laguna Seca was cool with all those interviews. Just you wait. It's going to be – that might – you know, we're going to have to stretch that over 2 weeks. There's no doubt, because I'm not even sure if I'm going to see any bikes on track. You know what, I'm going to be doing that. And I'm taking both recorders so I don't lose anything, as well as I figured out how to make my Droid record. So I may actually have three devices that are going to have this bundle of stuff. Just so I don't miss a single thing. Anyway, more...
Oh, we might have to put out a bonus episode.
We might just do that. We might just do a midweek.
It's easy for me to say, because I don't have to do the editing and the pushing and the broadcasting and all the other diddly technical bits that you and Jules do behind the scenes.
The nice thing about those kind of really rough cut things is I can do those all myself. I don't even have to drag Jules into the process, and I'll just put them out on the Facebook page. Another reason to go to the Facebook page, folks, every so often we put out extra content there. We don't make...
It's like the DVD extras disc.
Yeah, exactly. In literally the outtakes. I'm going to ask this question, because I think I've brought it up kind of coyly before, but I am curious. And this is just send a yes or no or post somewhere. How many of you people out there that listen to the show actually listen to it all the way to the end? And when I say the end, I'm talking about the little fade out music, the disclaimer from Bob, and then whatever might come after that. I've been doing this pretty regularly, Martin. I think you would agree for probably the last 4 months or so. And I'm going to leave it at that, because if you guys know that I've got a bit of a devilish sense of humor, you guys, you know, it's going to be funny. I would bet that a few people are going to probably go back and listen to shows that they were listening to before and just pull it all the way to the end and see what might be out there, because I think I'm getting tired in the opposite direction that you are now. You're just waking up with your coffee, and I'm starting to nod off.
Oh, I'm buzzing to go. Yeah, I'm
done. Yeah, well, yeah, and you got to get out of Dodge. So let's finish up here. We did have the BSB round at Brands Hatch, and frankly, it was brilliant. Run through that real quick because we're getting into sort of this weird little weird but cool in a very interesting way scoring type of opportunity that's coming up.
Yep, we had a three-race round at Brands, won by Michael Rutter, and the next two races both by Tom Sykes, as mentioned earlier. There's now one more round of what they're calling the normal season, which is Cadwell Park, after which the top six riders, five of whom are already confirmed, will go into the showdown. That's three race meets, the final three race meets, comprising of seven races, because the last weekend at Alton Park is a three-race meet. The five already in are Chiannari, Tommy Hill, Josh Brooks, Michael Rutter and Michael Laverty. And then there's Alistair Seeley, John Laverty and Stuart Easton still in the hunt for the final place, although Stuart Easton would need to have a heck of a weekend to close the gap to the other two who are quite close together. At that stage, the top six all start on a nominal 500 points, although they do get extra points for each of the podiums they've scored during the season so far, and I think it's three for a first place, two for a second, and 1 point for a third. The whole idea, it sounds horribly complicated, the whole idea of it was to prevent a situation like we had last year with Leon Camier just running away, and the race and the whole season being decided with three meets to go. Mm-hmm. So the fact that Keogh is top of the tree now and Josh Brooks has dropped, it's kind of irrelevant because the normal points will be on offer, and then basically all the other riders from position seven in the championship down are kind of racing for the plate cup or the runners-up trophy.
Sure.
You know, it's for them, it's going to be a little bit dispiriting, particularly if someone has a brilliant last three meets. And because you know that all the number crunchers out there are going to be saying, okay, if we'd had a normal season, how would it have differed?
Would it
make a difference?
But, you know, there is also, and I think they were thinking about that when they were putting this together, because they came up with an innovation that I totally agree with, which was you're gridded based upon your prior race. And so those same people that are in that second tier, if you will, have the opportunity to move up should they perform really well and have an even better starting position and can, you know, if they're like three down in that tier, can move up to the top of the pops. So,
yeah, and we've seen, I think, Keogh in one race started 11th in race one from qualifying because he had a bad qualifying and was on pole position for race two. Now, that I really like. That I would like to see in World Superbikes because, you know, for example, Leon Camier, he started from 16th at at Silverstone, you know, and came through to third in race two. Well, his race one, he had, I think it would have placed him fourth, so he'd been front row rather than 16th. Well, you know, he could have been looking at challenging Cal for that second race win. That bit I like, because you can put a bad qualifying behind you. Conversely, though, of course, if you qualify on pole, and then you just have you pick a race setup because you think it's going to rain or something different happens and you end up pretty bad, you can be relegated back down the pile. But no, I quite like that. Hello?
Sark, you there?
Yeah.
Sorry, I had my mic turned off. I was having a sip of...
Oh, that's okay. You might want to edit that long silence.
No worries. I do really like that setup, and I am looking forward to what's going to happen the rest of the year. And I'm pretty sure that I like the group of players that are up in those top six, so we'll see how it goes out. I did want to ask you a question. I'll just toss this out there. I am in the process of, so what are you doing on the 26th of September? It's a Sunday.
Oh, it's Sharon's birthday.
It is. Well, I think you should take her to Silverstone for the BSB races.
Yes. There may be a hangover issue.
Ah, well, the reason I say that is because I'm in the process of putting together for MotoGPOD and RideOn2.com a photographer for us there, because we are recognized by the BSB folks as well. And I was like, well, if we're going to have a photographer there, I might as well have a hungover Martin and Sharon.
That I can look into, but I've got to be honest, okay.
I'll edit that out. I thought it would be pretty funny to spring that on you. No worries. Okay, let me I'm going to ask you to bring up your run, keep it short for that you got coming up this weekend. Okay?
Yeah. And a week tomorrow, or a week Saturday. Okay. On the 21st, me and three other idiots, three of the paramedics from the crew, are doing a 10-kilometer hill run where basically there's a little steam engine, narrow-gauge steam engine, that we race against, and we're doing it for the Wales Air Ambulance. And anybody who feels generous enough to donate can go to www.justgiving.com/HeliMed59, H-E-L-I-M-E-D, and then the numbers 5 and 9, altogether, and donate there. And we've got a target of £500 we'd like to raise between us, which we think is possibly realistic. And we'll post some photographs afterwards of just how pain-stricken our expressions are.
Well, you may do it halfway up the hill. As a racer and somebody who has been airlifted, I am a massive advocate of any of what we call life flights over here, but getting pulled off the track and to your destination of non-choice, because the first hour is always the most important. People do the work that you do, Martin, I've got massive respect for. And you do it in a very interesting part of the world as well. So thank you for doing that. And now that I actually have a real job, I think I might have to go ahead and pop in and pledge.
Oh, bless you. It is both my duty and my pleasure. And speaking of which, I'm probably going to have to leave you to wrap up, because I'd better go and do what I do.
No problem. Get out of Dodge, and I will talk to you soon, Martin, and I will run the show into the ground.
Fantastic. Cheers, Jim. Good night. Cheer. Good night all. Good day all.
You're not even sure. Good Friday. How's that, Martin?
That's the one.
All right. Cheers. Bye. All right.
Ta-da.
Ladies and gentlemen, now you're trapped with me. This will be a fun little show. I'm trying to think of anything else that I might have, and I don't want to just plug things in here. But, the change in my particular position with the show as far as in regards timing will be interesting. But do guarantee that we'll make it work, and we'll have it set up for you. For all of the various things that we've talked about this week in the show, and unlike I've kind of been lazy about it, lazy, forgetful, one of the two, about making sure that the links are in for the show, and I've got all that information. Well, I've already got them knotted down, and since this is just Martin and me, it will be actually a little bit easier to get all this taken care of. So without any further ado, I'm going to let you go. Once again, thank you for downloading MotoGPOD, and we will talk to you next week with hopefully a bunch of good stuff from Jules. And I'll still probably line up an interview or two from domestically or overseas. Have yourselves a great weekend. Enjoy Brno, and we'll chat a little bit later. Ciao.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGPOD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGPOD isn't affiliated with any of them.